Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of People on the Move, a Cargomatic podcast. I'm Weston Labar, and I'm so honored to be here today with Congressman Robert Garcia, one of the very first people I met when I moved to California. Robert has been a fantastic ambassador, not just for Long Beach, but for the transportation community and trying to make us more efficient, more sustainable. And he's been our voice here throughout the nation as mayor of Long Beach, and now he's taking it to Washington, D.C. Robert, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks so much. Good to see you.
So before we hop into the, you know, the issues around supply chain and everything else, we have Pride Month coming up. You've been a very vocal supporter as a member of the LGBTQ community. We're so excited as a company to continue to support these awareness months and these different really important causes to bring more DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, milestones and again, just awareness to folks. Can you maybe talk a little bit about Pride Month, the importance of it? Obviously, Long Beach has one of the largest Pride parades and just what that means, especially maybe some advice you'd also give to folks that are coming up and being leaders, not just in the movement, but in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think first, it's important for companies, I think, to uplift diverse communities and to celebrate and attention to the importance of inclusion and diversity in the workplace. So I think it's great, obviously, that as a company, you guys are doing that. You know, I've been in Congress now for a few months. And prior to that, I, of course, was mayor of Long Beach. And, you know, one of the things that I always think about with relates to civil rights and LGBTQ plus rights is kind of the struggle that happened before I got elected to mayor. And I'm very grateful I was the first gay mayor to be elected in Long Beach. And that couldn't have happened without so much work and so many folks stepping up and so much support more broadly for the LGBTQ plus community. I think as we celebrate Pride, I always think about like the struggles to get us here. I think about all the allies that are out there. And I think about companies that are inclusive places to work for folks. I think that a lot of people don't realize that across the country, there aren't federal protections in place actually at every workplace. And that's, you know, there's a state patchwork of laws, but there's still a need for folks to advocate for real federal nationwide equal protection for LGBTQ plus people in the workplace. That might be the case here in California, but it's not the case everywhere else. And so while there's been a lot of advancement for the community, and as we think about Pride Month, in issues around marriage or issues around adoption, we still got a ways to go on issues around workplace discrimination issues. And as we see now, there's even more conversation around the education of what being gay is in our public schools. And so there's a lot of debate right now, and I think it's good to continue to uplift and celebrate Pride. And I'm glad that you guys are continuing to do that.
Yeah, I can say that, you know, many of our core pillars, one of them is about supporting and uplifting folks, and our diversity, equity, inclusion initiatives are equal to our ESG, you know, our sustainability goals. And I wanted to kind of pivot because you talked about patchwork and you couldn't have had a better segue into transportation policy in this nation. And where California and specifically cities like Long Beach and Los Angeles have been leaders in sustainability and in trying to figure out how we can have a more efficient supply chain. And you've been at the precipice of that, right? You've been very outspoken on what we need to do for our environment, but at the same time, having a very robust economy and a business community that can support it. Can you talk a little bit about going from mayor of Long Beach to Congress, where not everybody shares those same values, but you know, as business operators in a place like California, we advocate for national regulations. We advocate for everybody to be on the same page because, quite frankly, we can do our part, but when there's 49 states maybe not doing it, it makes it more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real struggle, I think. And you see this played out in industry after industry. And so I think, you know, one is, look, I think California obviously has been a leader on climate action and on kind of progressive kind of corporate responsibility and having a social nexus to doing good work within the corporate space. And so those are all really great things that exist in the state. I think California has led, particularly on climate action. But of course, you know, it's oftentimes you hear from business folks or even workers that for all the good that we're doing, we also become at a competitive disadvantage oftentimes because other states and other areas aren't doing the same heavy lifting, aren't paying the same wages. I mean, take issues, for example, around the minimum wage. I mean, the federal minimum wage isn't $15 or over $15 like it is here in California. It's barely over $7. And so there is a patchwork of laws across the country that provide, I think, challenges for a lot of businesses. And I think particularly for those that are here in California, we need to ensure that everyone else is kind of meeting our kind of gold standard of environmental law, of sustainability, of diversity, equity, and inclusion support. And I think a really good example of that, for example, are our ports and our supply chain. On the port side, we have some of the greenest sustainable laws anywhere in the country. Ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles are kind of leading the way on really being green ports and electrification and just really hydrogen. I mean, there's so much going on wind right now at the ports. Yet we have the strongest rules. And because we have those rules, it becomes much easier for other ports to gain, in their view, a competitive advantage because they don't have to meet the same emission standards that we're meeting. They don't have to spend and make the same investments that we're making to greener ports because we want to do it because it's the right thing to do. And so when we're putting in federal laws or even infrastructure investments, we need to have a more kind of broader nationwide approach. And so if we've passed a law here in Long Beach or Los Angeles that could make companies kind of rethink their strategy, make commitments to air quality, we don't want that to hurt trade or commerce. We want every port in America to have the same standard, to move up to our standards, that there is an even playing field. I think the same is true like for investment. So right now, for example, there's, enormous. I mean, we're talking, billions and billions of dollars that are being invested in climate and clean tech and ports. And one of the concerns from California ports is that we're already so advanced on our kind of climate electrification goals that a lot of the money will go to other states that have so much more work to do than we do because we've been like the good stewards. And so we shouldn't also be penalized for being good stewards and for kind of leading the way. We should continue to receive investments as should other parts of the country that need to kind of catch up to us. But we shouldn't be penalized for being so forward-thinking either.
Yeah, it's that age-old, the early adopter sometimes gets penalized for doing the right thing. And I know that's conversations we've had, at the city level, the state level, the federal level for many years is don't penalize the good folks. It just discourages them from setting the tone, right?
That's exactly right. And that happens over and over again.
And you brought up important things, which is the innovation around clean tech and just the advancements we're seeing in general. And I know, CargoMatic, we're a technology company. We look at sustainability in a couple ways. Obviously, it's the deployment of cleaner technology, but also it's about being more efficient operationally, being able to do more with less. That obviously helps with wear and tear on our roadways, being smarter about what we do. And then economic sustainability, that whole adage of you need to do well to do good, i.e. the more money a company makes, the more they can reinvest in cleaner technology faster without the need for subsidies. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, infrastructure at the federal level, because it's become a new thing, right? Infrastructure is as much about innovation and data and digital infrastructure, which the Port of Long Beach and LA are leading the way on, as it is bricks and mortars. And can you talk maybe a little bit, because I know there's been a lot of discussion, not just about federal highway bills, but how digital fits into that. And you've been at the center of that from your time here as the mayor of Long Beach.
Yeah, I mean, I think first we're not, the level of investment that we're getting on an infrastructure side is historic. I mean, we're not gonna get a bill this large through, at least probably for the next few years, could be several years. Because of how much was in there, right? And so that infrastructure bill has, as does the kind of Inflation Reduction Act and the climate provisions within that bill, is just enormous amount of money for communities, for companies to become greener. And a big part of the discussion is how do we move beyond just kind of the investment in the traditional infrastructure, like you mentioned, but in digital infrastructure, and making sure that we recognize that we've got to ensure that connectivity is happening across the country, that electrification is happening across the country. There's so much need for really building this kind of electrification network across not just California, but really the country. We want to. There's so much to do, but do we have the ability to do it through the technology that currently exists? And so there's just enormous support there. The infrastructure reduction, the infrastructure and the Inflation Reduction Act also includes significant money to create communication systems that then help speed up infrastructure projects. There's money in there for what we call what Congress has been calling kind of like the digital infrastructure network of not just cable, but including also other types of broadband technology, of Wi-Fi technology that will connect communities and connect systems. And so I think all of that is on the table, a huge amount of infrastructure and money that's going to go to seaports and how we move the supply chain more expeditiously. And that will include investments in how different pieces of a supply chain communicate with each other. That's also infrastructure. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity that we should take advantage of in both the infrastructure bill and the climate provisions of the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah, and you brought up another important point, which is the connectivity of the system as a whole. And you know, one of the great things about California is there's actually a statewide freight strategy. President of the Harbor Commission, Bonnie Lowenthal, she authored that bill. I know you were, again, as mayor, a very big supporter of that bill when it was going through the state legislature. And has there been any discussion with the supply chain being at the center of a lot of discussions, more so than it's maybe ever been, right, in Washington, D.C., about a national freight plan? Because many nations like Canada and others have it, which have helped them expedite projects. Let's just say it entice shippers to use Canadian ports at times when they could be using American ports. What's the climate around a national freight plan in the Beltway?
I mean, that's exactly what the work of the Bipartisan Ports Caucus is going to be about. I mean, I think so. You know, I'm the new Democratic chair. There's a Republican chair, Randy Weber, out of Texas. So we will both chair the Ports Caucus. We just are getting launched for the year. And the two of us intend to chair this group for the foreseeable future. And I think that kind of this kind of national approach to the supply chain is what we're focused on. We want to support, of course, local ports and innovation and individual states and the infrastructure that's being built. But there's also, as you know, you can't really build a really large project without federal support. It's very difficult, whether it's a direct federal support or whether it's the state essentially spending the federal government's money that to pass through to projects. I mean, every major project is really a federal project. And so one of the things that we're looking at is not only how do we build and invest in traditional infrastructure type projects, but how do we also build kind of these like national communication systems around ports, around supply chain, around all freight that's moving across the country? And what should federal investments look like? And what's the federal government's role in kind of moving those along or pushing those along? And so I think the federal government does have a role there. I mean, you're able to take out some of the competitive nature between kind of different points of the supply chain that occur across the country and be more of a broader kind of advocate for moving goods quicker, regardless of where they're coming in or what port they're coming in and where they're going out of. And so that is something that we'll be looking at. I've talked to, in fact, our friends at the Association of American Ports and folks within the industry that are advocating for this kind of similar approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some in our industry would argue that all of our issues are federal issues because we're in an industry of interstate commerce, right? And so obviously states need to weigh in where they need to weigh in, but there's always this broader umbrella of how does it impact the national economy? But I want to pivot a little bit because you mentioned you're now the Democratic chair on the bipartisan ports caucus and also freshman class president. And congratulations. I know all of us here that have watched you, you know, grow your political career are so proud because you've really been a rising star. When it comes to these issues around the national economy, around the supply chain, et cetera, what are some of your priorities? I mean, obviously, you've done so much from a city level all the way on, but now you've got this new opportunity. You've got a completely new role, but you've come in with a lot of firepower, unlike many freshmen that enter Congress. So what does Congressman Robert Garcia want to accomplish?
I mean, on the supply chain side, on the port side, I think that I want to make sure that California ports receive their fair share. I think that's really important. They don't currently and haven't. In fact, all federal spending is really lopsided as far as where the money goes, and it's not to the West Coast. And so I think that's one thing that's really important, is to really kind of relay how important West Coast ports are and how the supply chain out here really impacts the rest of the country. That's critical. And so that's a big piece of it.
The term's been donor port, right? We've been the donor port for years.
Absolutely. And then I think, you know, more locally, the broader kind of rail kind of investments that have to be made in Southern California are really critical. I think the conversations around whether or not we're going to create more inland opportunities for cargo development. I think the conversation around hydrogen and wind and what the roles are for our ports around there are going to be really interesting. Something I'm interested in is how ports can also become and continue to become spaces where there's also an energy economy that is being developed. So I think that's something that the Ports Caucus will also look at. And I think the question you brought up earlier, I'm very interested in how we solve this kind of really complex communication problem, and where we have really so many pieces of the supply chain not ever communicating with each other, I think is really critical. And so those are some of the port stuff. You know, I think more broadly, of course, is always going to be issues around, you know, immigration and healthcare and gun violence and public school funding that are really important. But I think the Ports Caucus will give us a vehicle to focus on those infrastructure dollars. I think the infrastructure bill was incredible. I mean, it could have been twice as big as far as I'm concerned, but it certainly provided a lot of resources and was going to our communities for the next 10 years.
Well, you touched on one thing. I'm going to ask you one more question about this before we just do a final, you know, words of wisdom from our congressman. But immigration, and I know that's always been a big issue that you've been a champion of. Obviously, you've been the beneficiary of good immigration policy here in the United States with the Dreamers Act, right? But it's a huge issue for our industry. We talk about it internally at Cargomatic all the time. There's so much cross-border commerce that happens. So many of the people, the men and the women that really literally move the freight in this economy are first generation or second generation individuals who came here for a better life and a better opportunity and found it in our industry. You know, we've talked about the opportunities of things like guest worker programs and making things easier for folks to do these jobs. So I quickly want you to talk about the role. I think immigration plays a role in everything that we do, and it is a big part of our economy if done the right way. It's such a positive impact. So maybe just knowing that it's a passion of yours, talk a little bit about what maybe we as an industry can better do to support the efforts of you and members like you in Congress to get better immigration policy to help this industry and help our economy.
Well, I mean, I think first, it's really a math issue in the House and in the Congress. I think there are clearly, you know, and not to make it partisan, but I think generally speaking, I think you have a House Democratic caucus that wants to pass an immigration reform package. And generally you have a House Republican caucus that doesn't, and that wants to focus only on border security. And I think, you know, I think both can be achieved. I think that nobody wants a border that's not secure or where there is not a orderly process. I think most folks want that. I think also most folks want a humane and robust kind of immigration process. I mean, there's 11 million people in this country without a pathway to citizenship. There are military veterans in this country, folks that served in our country that come back and they don't have citizenship and yet have no pathway on how to gain citizenship. That's crazy. I mean, there's tons of folks that go to school here, get PhDs, and then have got to go back to their home country after we've trained them and provided them with the best schools and prepared them to go into the best, you know, workplaces in America. And so it's a huge challenge. And now you're hearing from a lot of companies, CEOs, talking about the labor shortage, and it's real. And it's not just a labor shortage, it's that we have a talent shortage of folks as well, because there's not enough people in the job market. And so I think it's time for folks to realize that immigration has to be a priority, and we have to create a system where we support and bring in and attract not just people that need our support, but also the best and the brightest from around the world that we want to have them be a part of our country. There's just not enough access right now. And so it's a huge issue. And I hope that in the next few years, it's one that we could finally address.
Yeah. And then the last question, because my feeling is maybe this is what you're more passionate about than anything, which is education and workforce development. And for those of you who don't know, listening and watching, he's Dr. Robert Garcia. He is a very, very well-acclaimed educator, university professor. You know, I could go on. But for us, we have our own Cargomatic University. We actually have worked with USC on internship programs with international students that then we have to try to figure out how to get them a path to citizenship or work visas, right? And so I know with you, immigration, education are usually the two big things that you know underpin everything. So I want you to leave our listeners with what we can do to have a better workforce, and what we as employers, right, what we as industry can do to really tear down the barriers and help folks flourish. Because I know for you, that is such a critical element of all the policy you've done since, you know, maybe even your time as a staffer.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think that it's difficult to improve the kind of education system in this country. I think it's really a funding and priority issue. I think that if you underfund public schools, where vast majority of population attends, which is public institutions, you're not going to get a quality result. You're going to have scarcity in resources and in the ability to actually train the future. And I think that fortunately, California has made some significant investments on its own as a state, but at the federal level, we underfund our schools and our school infrastructure and our workforce programs. And I think that you can go to schools across the country that are vastly underfunded, and districts that are in desperate need of infrastructure investments in communities that are tax averse, right? And so the communities that need the most investment are so tax averse or investment averse that their schools end up being in the worst shape. Unlike maybe a place like Long Beach that will choose over and over again, whether people agree or not, that they will tax themselves to rebuild their schools or rebuild their workforce centers or invest in the public education system. And so they're, you know, we have so much waste in the federal government, and the amount of money that's in the federal government that is brought in is enough to take care of our problems. I look at, like, and this is unpopular for sometimes, but being a former mayor, I tell people, like, you can cut 1% out of anything. You know, 1% you can cut out of any budget. And the fact that we can't redistribute 1%, for example, of the Pentagon budget, and then fix every public school in America, to me is crazy. You have so much waste happening throughout the government that if we just focus on the things that really need to get funded and moved over, 1% here, 1% there, we'd have a much better country as it relates to education, climate, healthcare, and things that actually help people's lives.
Absolutely. Any final thoughts or any words of wisdom you want to leave for our viewers and listeners?
No, just you guys work for, as far as the folks that are watching that are internally to the company, a great company, and always good to see you, Weston, and happy to help and partner in the future.
No, thank you so much. Again, Congressman Dr. Robert Garcia, so happy to have him. He's doing a fantastic job representing the ports of LA and Long Beach and the entire, you know, really all of California, in Washington, D.C., and working to break down barriers and have progress across so many different things, but many of which impact our very important supply chain. So I really want to thank you. I want to thank you for always having the open door for everything and wanting to learn as much as you can. And we look forward to working with you while you're in Congress, hopefully for a very long time.
Thank you.